You got to accentuate the positive. Wow! I feel good. A little bit of feel good goes a long way.
You're listening to Karen Swain, teacher of deliberate creation, accentuating the positive, showing you a way to a better life.
Accentuating the positive, it's not just fad, it's sanity. Who in their right mind would accentuate anything else?
Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do.
G'day, g'day. Karen here, accentuating the positive. So great to be with you all again. And boy, do we have a fantastic show lined up for you today. And remember, you're listening to Accentuate the Positive Media on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I just love that there's a UFO Paranormal Network on 107.7 and 105.3 FM. Coming out of New Orleans and syndicated all over the United States and Canada. We're also streaming on my YouTube channel and on their YouTube channel and Facebook. I think we're even streaming on Twitter. So we're reaching a few people. So great to be with you today. I've got the Merkabah behind me because we're going to talk about healing today with the beautiful and wonderful Rebecca, she likes to be called Becky, Ostel-Clausen. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thanks so much, Karen. It is great. And I love the music and way to go. It's great fun to be here. Thank you very much.
Becky and I have been yakking for almost half an hour already before we went on to the live. And she's got so many stories. She was just about to launch into a story about Egypt. And I said, save it for the show. Save it for the show. But one of my group and participants and good friends who lives in near Salt Lake City in Utah, Kristen, Miss Mash is not listening today because she's doing something else, told me about Becky. You guys are good friends. How did you meet? How did you and Kristen meet?
Good question. We met at the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And actually what was happening was I was teaching Reiki and I set up the room ahead of time so that it's very comfortable and relaxing and such. And I walked outside before I started to set up the room and we were in a hotel and there was this lovely person sitting in the lounge. And I said, can I help you? And she said, yes, I'm here to volunteer. And I said, you're here to volunteer for? And she says, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And it was their annual conference. I think it was like 2 years ago. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm ready to head to this cemetery. And I don't know if you feel like driving me to the cemetery, but I would like to go to the cemetery because there's a totally cool grave site that I wanted to see. And she said, sure. And that was Kristen. And it turns out the grave site that I was visiting has a beautiful wheelchair on the top of the gravestone. And the child that had passed had been in a wheelchair his whole life. And then he passed about the age of 12. And it's a beautiful picture of him standing on the arms of the wheelchair, raising up his hand, looking at the life beyond with a big, huge smile on his face. And it turns out that Kristen has a brother that was in a wheelchair. She knew exactly where this was. And it was fantastic. And that's how I met Kristen. She ended up staying for the whole conference. And now she's in charge of logistics. And she's very involved with IONS. And she's totally fantastic. And we've become friends. And so that's how we met.
Darling one, she is totally fantastic. I agree. I concur. I had her on the show about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yes.
And then played the recording on this network. It was the first show that came on this network on the United Public Radio Network, and that was Kristen. I think it was like 7 years. I said, I want to talk to you on the show. She's like, I'm not ready. So after 7 years, we got her on the show. Because I have to say, in those 7 years, so much happened. But we could talk about Kristen all day. She's going to be like, why are you talking about me? Let me talk about you. Let me tell people a little bit about you. So Rebecca Ostel-Clausen, who likes to be called Becky, had a spiritually transformative experience in 1995 when she discovered her ability to communicate with her brother who had passed, even though she thought she had no psychic skills or spiritual ability, you know, psychic or empathic abilities at the time. Becky struggled with how her spiritual awakening and eventual spiritual transformation could mesh with the everyday world. She kept her spiritual adventures quiet for over 20 years. That's amazing. Don't have to keep them quiet anymore, I think, while exploring multiple avenues, including, oh, my God, there's a huge list here, shamanism, after-death communication, Reiki, meditation, sound healing, past life regressions, automatic writing, crystal energy, and even adventures with the fairy realm. Oh, love that. And you've been an occupational therapist and you're a Reiki master, award-winning author, international speaker. You're just awesome. In 2016, you sold a large rehabilitation private practice that had grown from a one-person operation to a staff of over 350 therapists serving 100,000 clients specifically to share your spiritual journey. And your book is called Changemaker, How My Brother's Death Woke Up My Life, became a multinational award-winning book. And your website is your name, RebeccaOstelClausen.com. And somebody is calling me. Don't you love that? So, Becky, let's go into how all this. Can you hear that calling me or is it just me hearing it?
I can hear it, but, it's a lovely sound.
How do I stop somebody calling me? There we go. No, don't you love it? There we go. Okay, let's go into how this started and when you started talking to your brother.
Sure. Well, thanks for that amazing introduction. My gosh, it's quite something. In 1995, my brother passed, and I couldn't understand why he passed. He's 37 years old. I think everything in life is positive. I could find absolutely nothing positive about the fact that my brother died. At that point, I thought he died. And I'm filled with grief. And my heart was the only thing I could feel in my heart was grief. And about 6 weeks after he passed, I'm riding my horse through a Christmas tree farm. And that day I received the best present of my life. It was November. It was middle of November in Chester Springs, Pennsylvania, and we had just had our first frost, and there were icicles hanging from the trees and rainbows were sparkling. My brother had passed of AIDS, and it was in the 1990s when just thousands and thousands of people were passing of AIDS, and it was so lovely to see all these rainbows and all these sparkles and all this new growth that was happening from our first snowfall. So anyway, I opened up my heart just a little and said, thank you, universe, for a beautiful day. I closed my eyes and there was my brother. And he was in human form wearing a black and red plaid flannel shirt, dungarees and sandals. And I seriously had never, ever, ever done this, heard about this, was not psychic, was not spiritual. I had no idea that this was possible. But my brother David was real. It felt luminescent. The scene was glorious, filled with love. I started to talk with him. I just started to talk with him and realized in a second that I could send thought, and he was great and I was great. I mean, gosh, I'm with my brother again. And I looked to the right and there were my grandparents, Abe and Bessie Dole. They had passed about 10 years before, holding hands like they always did. Beside them was Edward, our childhood friend. And he had passed about 6 months ago. Beside Edward was a friend of mine, Holly, who had passed 20 years ago. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I looked behind them and there were about two dozen other people, all that I knew that had passed. And I looked back at my brother, and behind him was a golden arch. Now, I had talked with my brother about 3 years before this, and had asked him if he had been tested for AIDS, and he turned away, and it was the hottest 10 seconds, longest 10 seconds of my whole life. I didn't expect him to turn away, and he said that he was HIV positive, and I didn't know what that was, which seems ridiculous now, but I didn't. And so David asked me to not tell anybody, please. He wanted to be kept the kept the, just people treating him the same way. And so I had no support system, which was okay because I'd do anything my brother wanted. But I found myself in a local bookstore, Barnes & Noble in Exton, Pennsylvania. And I was in a New Age section that talked about after-death communication. And I didn't know that that was possible. So I had read some books about after-death communication and sent some to David and such. And in these books, it said that if you ever see a doorway, feel free to go through if it feels comfortable. So I had this golden arch behind David. It wasn't McDonald's. It was a golden arch. And I looked to him thinking he would take me through the door. And instead, my 4'10" grandmother takes me by the hand and we skip through this golden arch. And on the other side was a fuchsia colored land. Now, my husband, Jeff, and I have two wonderful sons, Kenny and Ryan. And now they're in their mid 30s. And they, as you can imagine, have heard this story a few times. And they said, "Mom, do not say fuchsia." And I'm like, "Well, why not?" And they said, "It sounds like you're tripping. It sounds like you're high. It sounds like you're loaded. Just don't say fuchsia." But it really was fuchsia. And so I'm in this fuchsia colored land. And this time I hear my dad's dad, my paternal grandfather, because the grandparents that I had seen were my mom's grandparents. This is now my dad's father, Gramps. So I hear Gramps, didn't see him, I heard him. And he says in a very loving manner, he had passed about 15 years ago, "Come over here." And he takes me by the hand and we fly through this fuchsia colored land for what seemed like hours, reminiscing, enjoying being together, having a lovely time. And all of a sudden my horse starts to move. And so I'm sitting on the horse. The horse is starting to move. And I said to Gramps, "Gramps, I need to go back." And so we did this U-turn in this fuchsia colored land. The horse is moving, come to the golden arch. I fly through the arch. I land right in front of David. Horse is still moving. There's my grandparents and Edward and Holly and all, everything's the same. And I say, "I need to go back." And Karen, it was so amazing because what I heard from everybody all at the same time was, "We will always be here. We will always be here." I pulled up the reins and sat there on my horse for about 20 minutes and thought, "What just happened to me?" And it's the first time I really believed that life was eternal. It was fantastic.
It's an incredible story, just an amazing story. I want to ask you, were you on the horse the whole time this was happening?
Yes.
And was the horse moving?
Yes. Oh, no, wrong. Sorry. The horse was not moving while this was happening. But I, the horse was, it turned out to be, the horse was very spiritual and very receptive and very aware. And I have all sorts of horses, all sorts of stories about what happened with the horse. But this was the first time that I had actually had a meditative experience on the horse. Her name was an Astra, A-S-T-R-E, which means star. And so I'm like, "All right, great." Yes. So I was on this horse that was not moving while all this was happening until that part where she started to walk.
She started to walk. So this whole experience happened in sort of a nanosecond on Earth, but you felt like you were communicating with the other side for a while, yeah?
It the whole thing happened in about 20 minutes because I had somehow was aware of the time before this all started. And so it was about a 20-minute period, which it seems sort of amazing that the horse would stand still for about like 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. It felt like I was, absolutely felt like I was. Well, you know, there's no time. I mean, there's no time when we travel to different realms. And I had this business where I was billing 5-minute increments, and it took me years to understand how there could be no time. But there is no time. There's only time on Earth. Mm-hmm. And so, it was the whole thing took about 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was listening to you on Kathy Mason's show last night.
Who's fantastic.
Kathy, shout out to Kathy. She's gorgeous. And I'm sure you've shared that story a million times because it happened so long ago and you've been on so many shows. But I love the bit where you say you were grieving, but then in the middle of the grieving, you stopped to appreciate something. And so you shifted your vibration and you moved from grief or sadness into appreciation and love. Yes. And it sounded like that appreciation felt like bigger than just, oh, isn't that pretty? It was just like, it sounded like it was like, oh, isn't that amazing? And in that frequency, you had access to the other realms, which was a similar frequency because we have to acclimate our energy to be able to reach that. And you didn't know that you could do that, but wow. Were you asking at the time, I wish I could talk to my brother, or where are you? Like, were they questions that were in your mind after he died?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I had no idea. No, I had no idea that, well, I shouldn't say I had no idea because I had read a lot of books, but I had never, ever, ever experienced it, nor did I believe that I could experience it. But there must have been a part of me that allowed myself to travel into this other realm, and it was fantastic. So then what happened was I'm sitting on the horse. I believe that life was eternal, and I'm like, I have got to do this again. How can I learn how to communicate with my brother David? And so this is 1995. The internet was not there, and I went to the library. So I went to the library and I had no idea what I was going to look for. I didn't know what the reference name was. I had nothing to go on. And I just started walking up and down the aisle. I'm quite sure I thought a book was going to fall out and it would be the book that would explain everything. And it did not. It did not happen. And so I'm like, wow, that's sort of interesting. And so I went to the health food store. And I looked at the health food store bulletin board and thought, well, maybe there'd be something that will resonate. And nothing did. And I'm the type of person that does my own thing. Like, I don't hardly ever ask for help. But at that point, I asked. And I asked the universe to send me a teacher. And so that's what happened. I asked. And a couple weeks later, I had a cool experience where I found one.
Who was your teacher?
Well, I wasn't sure if you wanted me to go into it, but I'll be glad to share. So a friend of mine, her name's Dr. Amy Carroll, and she's a occupational therapist, and she was on my staff at the time. And at that point, we had about 68 therapists. And so Amy came in, and I did not share with anyone, except my husband. My husband knew that this happened. I don't think I even told my parents. I might have, but my husband has been my major support. And thank goodness he didn't think that I had lost my mind. But anyway, Amy comes in to my office and she said, how are you doing? And by this time it was about maybe like 8 or 10 weeks after my brother had passed. I'd had this experience about 6 weeks after he passed. So I said to Amy, well, you know, it's really rough. It's hard. And she said, I met someone that I think you'd like. And I'm like, well, who did you meet? And she said, I met a shaman. Now, in all my explorations, when my brother told me that he had AIDS, but to please keep quiet about it, I had read a little bit about shamans, but I thought they lived in Brazil or Peru. And I said, where does this shaman live? And she said, Reading, Pennsylvania. Now, Reading, Pennsylvania is an urban city. It's actually the Reading Railroad in Monopoly, just for your information. But anyway, to have a shaman live in Reading, I'm like, Reading, Pennsylvania? And she said, yes. And she talks with dead people. I'm like, you're kidding. And so I called up, her name's Nancy Ariel, and she has passed, but she is still very much around. So I called up Nancy Ariel and made an appointment, and I apprenticed with Nancy and saw her for 3 to 6 hours a week for 1 year. And that's when I learned how to continue communicating with my brother, still communicate with him to this day. I learned Reiki, explored all sorts of modalities, and had a total blast.
Amazing. Amazing. I guess back in 95, yeah, you didn't have the internet. So you're like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, it seems so curious not to have the internet, but we didn't have it.
So let me ask you, did that communication still continue? And did your brother, what is your brother's name?
David.
David. Did he talk about like what he's doing, what's happening on the other side? Did you ask him those questions?
You know, it's interesting. I found myself listening more than asking, because there was so much information that was starting to be shared. It really was quite fabulous. And so he would talk with me and let me know how he's doing. But actually what happened was when I was with Nancy, she did what's called shamanic journeying. And so she would use Reiki to get me relaxed. And then we would go on a shamanic journey. And the very first shamanic journey I ever had, and that's when your consciousness travels to different realms. And she was always there with me, which was good in the beginning, but it was so fantastic. It was really, really, really exciting. And what happened the very first journey, she said, there's going to be a bird. And the bird's going to come down towards you. And so she said, do you see anything? And I saw this big black bird. And this bird was friendly. And it came down and landed right in front of me. And I was talking to Nancy. My eyes were closed, but I was visualizing this. And she would say, please tell me what's happening and such. And I said, well, the bird just landed. And she said, it's a friendly bird and you're going to get on its back and you're going to ride on the back of this bird. It's all right. It can hold you. And so I looked at the bird and the bird looked at me and I climbed onto the back, and then the bird took off, and it took off and it traveled through all different realms. It went through a tunnel, very similar to what happens with a near-death experience. There was a little bit of a black spot, but then it came through the light. And when it went through the light, I saw multiple beings, and there was one being that came in the front. Now, I'm a PK, which is a preacher's kid. And so I grew up in a religious atmosphere. My dad was an Episcopalian minister, a low Episcopalian, not real high. If you're a high Episcopalian, it's more close to Catholicism. We were of a lower Episcopalian denomination. And I used to play the organ for church. And so all these people that I had originally seen with my brother and grandmother and Edward and David were people that I'd played the organ at their funerals, and I knew that. And so anyway, this one being came forward when we had finished, when I'm on this bird, and then we ended up finishing the tunnel of light and such. And I felt, and still to this day feel, that was God. And so I knelt down in front of God. And I had been an agnostic and an atheist for a long time. But I was in the presence of a beautiful soul. And for me, it was masculine. No specific face, but it was had a robe and it was very, very prominent. And I knelt down in front of God. And God said, rise, rise. You don't need to kneel down. And Nancy, and I was talking to Nancy at the time, and I said, I'm in the presence of God. And she said, ask him a question. And I'm like, who am I to ask God a question?
Wow.
It was amazing. And I'm like, what question is appropriate for me to ask God? And I'm a pretty much a workaholic. And so I said, is it all right if I get involved in this experience, in this realm? Will my work, my family, and I had another one. Will my work, my family, and maybe myself, will my work, my family, and myself be okay? And God laughed and said, yes, of course, of course. And it was a beautiful laugh. It was a comforting laugh. Of course, you're doing fine. And I thought, oh my gosh. And so at that point, the scene sort of faded away, and I got back on the blackbird and came down, and then spent quite a bit of time with Nancy processing that. And it wasn't until years later, like I'm talking 15 years later, that I realized that blackbird was my brother. And the way I want me to keep going as far as the way I know that it was my brother.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I've got so many questions, but keep going.
Okay. So the way I figured out that it was my brother was about David lived with a woman by the name of Lorene, and they were very close friends. And Lorene had her room and David had his room, and he knew her schedule intimately. And he passed, and you know, we all got together and had a little celebration for my brother's life. About a week after he passed, Lorene calls me up and she said, "Hey, Beck, I have a story. You have a few minutes?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "You know, it was a couple of days after David passed." She said, I went into the bathroom at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I always go into the bathroom at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I heard a knock. Hopefully you can hear that.
Yep.
And she looked around, and she had a claw tooth bathtub, and she looked under the bathtub, and she opened up the closet, and she looked in the underneath the sink, and she kept hearing this knock. And she's like, where is this knock coming from? And she had a dog named Bubbles. And so it was a Bichon dog, and it was going nuts. It was just going round and round and round and round. And all of a sudden, Lorene looked up, and she looked up at the ceiling, and there was this big black bird, and it was knocking on the, it was a, I guess, a, whatever you call it, when, well, anyways, this window on top of the room. And so she goes to the closet and she gets a broom and she says, "Go away, go away." And the bird went away. The next morning at 7 o'clock in the morning, she goes into the bathroom again. And immediately she hears, and it's the bird again. And she had left the broom there. And so she swishes it, and the bird goes away. Go away. The third day in a row, she goes back, 7 o'clock in the morning. And what does she hear? And she looks up at the bird and she says, "David, I know it's you. I'm okay. I love you. I miss you. And the dog is going nuts." And so David never came back. And I did not get that connection of the blackbird being the same blackbird that Lorene had seen for years. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, that was my brother that brought me to, you know, through the tunnel and to see God. It's really quite something.
You say that you're a PK, preacher's kid. And so I didn't grow up in any sort of religious background, and I was quite agnostic, as you say, like you. It's funny that you were agnostic after being brought up as a preacher's kid.
I was.
That's interesting. But a lot of my Catholic girlfriends became very atheist, actually, after going to a convent and being taught by the nuns. I thought that was interesting too. But, you know, I think our concept of God, so many people who have these experiences, near-death experiences, they meet a presence that is so, what can I say, divine, or it feels so incredible that they call it God. But I feel like you met yourself, like your higher self, that God aspect of you or a guide. Because I don't know, like we think that if anything is divine, it can't be us. It has to be some entity that is God. What do you think? Do you think it was God, or do you think it was your guides or your higher self?
I have never thought of anything other than God, but that's such an interesting way to think, because we're all connected. We're all part of one. We're all love. What an interesting thing. I will certainly keep thinking about that. It really is quite fascinating. It's so fun. And I certainly have multiple guides and spirits and all of that, and have met many of them. And it's a blast. The whole thing is a blast. It's really, really fun exploring.
And the part about your brother presenting as a bird, how do you think that works in spirit? Do you think that a soul or energy, you know, an orb, it talks to the bird or influences the bird? Or do you think they pop into the bird's body or the animal's body? How do you think all that works when a spirit is communicating through an animal?
Good question. And if you don't mind, I'm going to share a little bit of a story that happened to me that is related to this question. So my brother is passing. He's in the hospital, and he had always said to Lorene and to mom and dad, if I ever have to go to the hospital in an ambulance, I know I'm not coming back. And so my parents called me one day at early in the morning at 10:01. And, you know, numbers are significant. And one for me is new beginnings and zero is completion. And I'm at work, and my secretary came in, my assistant came in and said, Becky, your mom's on the phone. Mom and dad are on the phone. And I'm like, whoa, that's sort of something, because they never called me at work. And they said, David's just been taken to the hospital in an ambulance. And I had heard David say this about if he ever went to the hospital in an ambulance, he wasn't coming back. So I immediately made plane reservations immediately and went home and packed my black suit and hoped I wasn't going to need to wear it, and rushed into the hospital and flew from the Philadelphia airport to Boston, brought my suitcase into the hospital in a big rush and saw David lying there. And he said, Becky, I'm so sorry to take you from work. And I thought, oh, how can he even say that? But that was correct. You know, I just put work before pretty much everything. And I said, David, it's totally fine. And I felt so bad. It was such a wake-up call. But anyway, David was passing, and a lot of his friends and family and such came in. And I had a feeling, and the doctor had said he was probably going to pass the next day. And so I didn't want him to pass alone. And I said to the hospital, can I stay with my brother tonight? And they said yes. And so they brought in David had a private room, and they brought in a bed or something. And I woke up at 3:00 in the morning, and I didn't know anything about energy. I knew nothing about energy. But somehow, when I woke up at 3:00 in the morning, I knew David wasn't there. He was on his back, and he was on a respirator. I think I get it mixed up between a ventilator and a respirator. I feel like a goofball, but whatever. It was just helping him not breathe, but just have an easier way to breathe. So he was on this, and you could hear these breaths. It goes, and then another. And there was absolutely no energy in his body. There was nothing. And so I thought, oh my gosh, my brother has passed, but this respirator was keeping his body alive. But somehow I knew that his consciousness had gone into, I don't know where. I didn't know where. I just knew it wasn't there. So this is now 3:00 in the morning. And I thought, well, now what do I do? David's not here. Do I go home to my parents and have them say, what's going on? And I'm like, well, David's body's still there, but he wasn't there. Like, that didn't sound right. And so I decided to stay there. And Edward, the same Edward that I had seen when David originally came to me after I was on the horse, Edward had given David a quartz crystal, a fairly long, it was about 4 to 6 inch long quartz crystal that I had held. And Lorene had brought it into his hospital room. She brought a few of his things. So I held that quartz crystal. For some reason, I picked it up earlier in the day, and it gave me a tingle. And I'm like, what? And so I put it down and put it up again, and it tingled again. Now, this was Edward's crystal. I thought, well, that's sort of interesting. I didn't know anything about crystals. And so so I took Edward's crystal. David's flat on his back. I didn't feel any type of energy at all. I take Edward's crystal, and I also took David's crystal because he had a similar crystal. David's crystal had no energy, nothing. I didn't get anything from David's crystal. I put them both in my hands and then put David's hand in my hand. So I had David's hand, the two crystals in my hand surrounding it, and I closed my eyes. And I saw the ocean. And in the ocean was this humongous fat porpoise. It wasn't really a porpoise. It looked sort of like a porpoise, but it didn't have the hump on the back or the fin, whatever it's called, the triangle thing that goes on the top of a back of a porpoise. Yeah, it didn't have that. The what?
Yeah, the fin, the dorsal fin.
Yeah, the fin. Right. Okay. Yeah. So it didn't have that, but it was fat. I'd never seen anything like this ever. And so it had the most beautiful brown eyes. beautiful brown eyes that were staring at me. And I looked at these brown eyes and it was my brother's eyes.
Oh.
And I thought, oh my gosh. And then it slowly, very slowly started to come towards me. And then it entered me and I'm filled with the most beautiful, encompassing love that I had ever felt. And I knew David was alive. And somehow he had transformed into this animal. And David is a Pisces, and so am I. And so is my dad. And so we all love to swim. But when David, he survived for 7 years with the diagnosis of HIV and then AIDS. And so he was considered a long-term survivor at the time. And he had a shunt in his body, and he wasn't able to go swimming for 2 years. Now he was in the ocean. And he was, I knew that he was part of this animal. And after a while, he came out of me and I could see him swimming away. And on the side of him on the right was a smaller animal, and that was Edward. And so Edward was with my brother and they swam away, and it was absolutely magnificent. And I thought, oh my gosh, I really believe that that was David that was filling me with love and letting me know that he was around. And I went outside, and I was, this now like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just walking around. There was a lovely little, some trees and the grass, and my parents came in at 7:30 that morning, and I did share what happened. And my dad, being a minister, he says, you know, Becky, people deal with death in all sorts of ways. And he didn't say anything except for that. And I'm like, okay, he didn't tell me I was nuts. And David was still on his back. The body was still breathing and such. And that day we sang songs and such. And then he passed that night. His body stopped breathing. But it really was quite something. And so the answer to your question is, I do believe that our souls from other realms can enter animals and spirits and sort of take them over for a time, and then they leave. And I do have a final part. I don't know if I'm going too long or whatever, but I have a final part to this story if you want.
Well, I just want to remind people that you're listening to Accentuate the Positive Media on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, streaming out of New Orleans on 107.7 and 105.3 FM. And yeah, I want to hear the rest of it. So you think that the consciousness of who we are as spirit talks to the consciousness or the soul that's inhabiting an animal's body and says, shove over, I'm coming in. You
know? Well, I think they say it nicely.
You know, can I just take over your body for a minute? I've got a message to send my loved one.
I do. That's what I think. Now, I don't know if that's right, but that is what I think.
Yeah.
The final story part of this story is about, I drew a picture of this animal because I didn't know what this was. And it was on a little pink hospital pad, you know, the memo pads that I brought home, and I showed it to my husband. And I said, this is the picture of what I saw. About maybe 2 months later, our kids, and they were, I guess, maybe about 8 and 6 years of age. They were looking through Life magazine and they saw the animal that I saw. They didn't know it. And they said, oh, I wonder what this is. And I looked at it and like, oh, that's the animal. And I ran upstairs and got this pink memo pad and brought it down and showed it to my husband. And I said, this is the animal. And what it was a manatee. I had never seen manatees before. Ah. And so it was a manatee. And I thought, oh my gosh, now why would my brother be coming as a manatee? But David had done some sailing and things, and he knew that manatees were on the brink of not being able to survive, because sometimes boats would go over them and they would hurt their backs and such. And so I thought, oh my gosh. And so of course I joined the Save the Manatee Fund immediately. And got pretty involved with them for a while, and it really was quite something. And so I have these two kids now that are like 8 and 6 or 7 and 5, whatever they were. And it was interesting explaining to them why I was crying and what happened. And and I let them know that in my opinion, I believe my brother was alive. And it really was quite wonderful to be able to share that experience with my two young kids and to have my husband support that whole concept as well. It was nice.
Wow. And he, he came as a manatee there. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful. So he was sending you a message like, check out the manatees and what's happening to them. And yeah, wow.
Can I tell you another story about a bird?
Sure. I just want to acknowledge people that are watching online.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure there's more than just the gals online, but the gals are talking. We've got Shirley and Wendy says, I can hear your Boston accent.
Yes, it is a Boston accent.
Kirsten, Sherry was the first one to pipe in. Desley, we've got the gals online. So I just want to say hi to everyone.
And me too. Listening. Hi. Thanks so much for being here.
And we're doing a group catch up after the show, right on 8 p.m. Eastern. It's 10 a.m. Sydney time. For people who want to join on Zoom, let me know on Facebook or YouTube and I'll send you the Zoom link. And Becky said that she'll come in for 10 or 15 minutes to meet you and answer any questions because it's about an hour and a half show. So I didn't want to keep her too long in the group, but the group is just to catch up and chat about anything you want to talk about, life after death, and, you know, ET experiences, psychic ability, anything you want to talk about. But yes, please go into your next story. Loving
it. It relates to your question about animals and what happens with our consciousness and how do animals come into, I mean, how does the consciousness of life beyond enter animals in this physical realm? I ended up writing a book about the first year after my brother passed, but then I kept having all sorts of interesting experiences. And one of the things that happened was a neighbor had a son that passed, and his name's Cam, C-A-M, Cam. And we join backyards, and Cam passed when he was, I believe, 14. And so I was standing in my garden and looking and sending love to Cam's home and parents and such. He had just passed. And I hear in my head, Mrs. Clausen, I didn't know that you could do this. And I thought, oh my gosh, who is this? And it was Cam. And so I said, Cam, I'm so sorry. How are you doing? And he said he was doing okay, but please tell my mother that I'm okay. Well, I wasn't sure I wanted to go over in the early stages of them being very sad that Cam had just passed and said, hey, I just talked to Cam. I wasn't really sure that was the best idea. And so I said, Cam, I will. And he said, please do it right now. I said, I just don't think it's the best idea now. But I did go, of course, to the wake and to the funeral, and the flowers that I got matched the flowers that they had picked out. I mean, all sorts of synchronicities. But it really was quite something. And I was able to share the fact that I did talk with Cam. And I wanted to write up a story about this. And I gave it to the parents and said, is this all right if I get this published? And it was going to be with another group. And so this other group that was going to publish this story about me meeting Cam and such was not really that receptive to the idea of after-death communication, and they wanted to change a lot of things, and it just wasn't right. And I finally decided not to publish this story with this group. And so I'm sitting in my backyard. It was fall, and I'm typing the resignation for having this story in this potentially to soon to be published book. And a bird came and sat on my computer. So I have the computer screen up and the bird, I'm outside and the bird comes and sits there. And I'm like, well, this is interesting. And it was a little wren. And honest to Pete, this bird stayed for 15 minutes and it was going back and forth, walking on the top of my laptop and looking at Cam's house. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I went in, I just was able to focus for just a second. And it was Cam. I asked, who are you? And are you Cam? And it was Cam. And it's been so interesting to be able to tap into different consciousness of animals and ask them who they are. And the same bird, it had a funny little eye. About a month later, the same bird came to our bird feeder. And I immediately could tap into the energy and knew it was Cam. And I thought, oh my gosh, it would be totally awesome if I could get a picture of this. And at that point, I think my husband came right by and he took a picture of this bird, Cam, because I had put out my finger. Now, this is a wild bird. I put out my finger and the bird landed right on my finger and my husband was able to get that picture. And I think to this day, my Facebook picture is that picture of Cam on my finger as a bird. And so the thing that I always encourage people to do when we see animals that remind us of our loved ones that have passed is ask, just ask. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you know, get calm, couple of deep breaths, close your eyes if you want. I always encourage people to close their eyes because I think sometimes we get distracted with all the visual activity going on. And then ask and believe whatever you receive, if it resonates with you. You know, 98% of the time it's going to resonate. But if it for some reason doesn't feel right, then just disregard it. But that was Cam. And so, yes, animals absolutely can hold the spirits of our loved ones. And I do believe the spirits of our loved ones just come on in and absorb that energy and become that animal that we will remind us on this earth that it's them, that they are still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. And the animal kingdom. Yeah. It's amazing. I had my cat ran past the window a couple of years ago with something in its mouth, and I went racing outside. What have you got in your mouth? And it had a tiny, weeny little baby bird in its mouth that was not doing too well. And I rescued the bird from my cat and did a healing on it and kept it overnight. But as I was healing this bird, I tapped into the consciousness of the bird kingdom, and oh my God. Talk about, I mean, we talk, you know, in the spiritual community, we're talking about oneness and unity all the time. But these beings live inside that experience. I felt one with every single other bird on the planet. I don't even have words to explain what I felt. And so there's something about the animal kingdom that has that on tap, you know, that unity consciousness, even though they eat each other and kill each other, they're still unified. It's really quite extraordinary. And I think that that's where we're heading as humanity, moving back into that consciousness. Even though we're so much more intelligent, so to speak, than animals, they have something that is that connection to the unification of source, the oneness of source, that we as humans have forgotten.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. You explained that beautifully.
You know what, Becky, I have no words to explain what I experienced. And I think that I can only say that when people talk about their NDEs and that they move back into that energy of being one with everything, and then they try and talk about it afterwards, it's like, I get it now.
Yes.
I got it from a bird, but yeah. But, you know, like so many people are leaving the planet now, and death is such a big concept. A big story in many people's lives. In many people's lives, there was a beautiful healer that died the other day, and all the people on Facebook are talking about her and sending tributes and hundreds of photos on her tribute page. And just reading the comments of all the healers that were connected to her, there's such joyous comments. There's many sort of condolences type comments, but there's so much like, oh, you finished, you know, what you came to do here, and I'll see you in the other realm. It's so interesting being, you know, in a community full of healers and spiritual teachers where death becomes a joyous thing and not a sad thing. What do you want to say to people about death and if they've got going through a death or, yeah, what do you want to say to people about that?
First of all, I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry that you have had the experience of losing the physical connection with your loved one. And so I absolutely send you lots of love and lots of support. Please know that they're still alive, that they can communicate with you, that you will receive a message from them. And I encourage you to believe. A lot of times we get messages within the first couple of days, and these are messages that remind us of our loved one. And if you can, if you get an animal or a radio song that you turn on your radio and there's their favorite song, or you turn on the TV and there is their favorite TV show, the first thing that happens, say thank you. Thank you. I love you. And you know, the tears are fine, because of course we're going to start crying when we are so intimately reminded of our loved ones, but that's them. And they are sharing their love. They are sharing their continuity of life. We do not die. We are spiritual beings living a physical existence. We're not physical beings. We're spiritual beings. And we have a short, limited time here physically, but we will meet up. And we have a family. We have a soul family. And most of the time, the people that we are friendly with and part of our family on earth will remain intimately involved with us at all times. And so I encourage you to believe. It really is real. And there's all sorts of studies these days. I got so many messages when, I think it was, I don't know, NBC or ABC or whatever, some big TV station had Life is Eternal. And there's all sorts of movies now these days about the continuity of life. Like it is real. It is absolutely real. And we all can tap into it. We all can believe. We all can receive that communication and that validation that our loved ones are still with us. Sometimes they need to be healed. You know, sometimes they do need to be healed. And then they come. I've got a fun story about that if you'd like me to share it.
Yeah, it's really interesting how things are changing. I do want you to share it. It's just so fascinating. Like, I've been doing this for a long time, like you. And, you know, my spiritual wake-up call was the death of my mother when I was a teenager. And actually, I put out a book called Awakened by Death. Have you ever been on Sandra Champlain's show, Don't Die? Have you been on her show?
I haven't been on it, but I've listened to it and I know her. And because she comes to Irons. And so, yes, she's absolutely awesome.
I don't know. She's still doing the show. Anyway, I met Sandra at the beginning of the show journey, and she's one of the authors in the book. And I was going to call the book originally Surviving Death. And then Leslie Keynes put out a book called Surviving Death. And then she's got this, you know, here's a brute for Leslie. She's got this Netflix series called Surviving Death. And I was so upset that she took my name.
It's a good name.
And then I was just going to call it Death or something. And then Sandra said, no, you can't call it that. Why don't you? She gave me a few suggestions. And one of them was Awakened by Death. So she gave me the name. So I'm shouting out to you, Sandra.
That's a good name.
It's a great name. And your story is that. That is your story. You were awakened by death. Like death, the transition of someone here on earth, is the possibility of being such an enlightening experience for many. And yet so many people suffer over the death when it can be that reminder of who we really are. Like we are not this body. We are not even our ego and our mind and our brain and our accolades and all this sort of stuff. We are that spirit that never dies, that is eternal, that inhabits this body for a very short period of time. Yeah, and so death can be a great reminder of who we really are, awakened by death. And again, I want to remind people that we're on 107.7 and 105.3 FM, streaming out of New Orleans, United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And what was the other story that you had? There's no questions, but there's some great comments. But if you have any questions, we're going to meet afterwards on Zoom. I know there's another show straight after mine, so I don't want to interrupt that show, but if you want to continue this conversation. But please share your other story, Becky.
Well, first of all, I'm so sorry that your mom passed so early for you. And the story that I have is about my mom as well. My mom had 13 years of sciatic pain. It's terrible, terrible pain in her back. And she was challenged by this pain. It's the first time she ever had it. She was in Nova Scotia and was taken to the hospital, and they had to clap her back. I mean, meaning that she had to, you know, be clapped on her heart in order to get the heart to beat again. But anyway, mom passed, and I didn't hear from her for 6 months. I did hear one thing. I was there when she passed, and she said, you know, thank you. And she said it with great love. And it was my sister PM and myself that were there. But I didn't hear from her for 6 months. And I didn't go and ask for her to come. I wanted to, you know, just let her be. And I knew she'd come. I had no doubt sometime she would be there. So she always used to do puzzles. And my husband was doing a puzzle, and I was looking over at this puzzle, and all of a sudden in my head, I hear my mom, and she goes, the piece goes right there. And I'm like, oh, mom, how are you? And she's very focused, very focused. The piece goes right there. And I'm like, all right, mom. And we did draw the piece, and it almost went right there. It didn't exactly fit. But to this day, mom comes as a bird, and she comes as a robin, because she always, always, always fed the birds. And robins were, I guess, probably your favorite bird. And so when a bird or an animal comes right up to us, and it acts in a non-bird-like fashion, that's sort of a clue that something's happening with this bird. And that's when you ask, who are you? And so my husband's got very good at this. He's, I think your mom's around. And I'm like, why do you think that? And he says, well, this bird came right up to me and has been with me for 15 minutes. And it's really quite validating and very enlightening and fun to have that happen. And so, of course, you know, I say, thanks, mom, you know, love you so much. And it's wonderful to have you here.
You're making me shiver, Becky. You know that we're doing this. It's the 8th of April here in Down Under. I mean, it's the 7th over there. I know it's the 7th, but everyone's talking about the eclipse, the eclipse.
Oh, the eclipse, right.
So we are doing this on the, you know, in Australia, it's the 8th, on the date of the eclipse. Synchronicity. But you know, every time you talk about these birds, my daughter's grandmother, her dad's mother, just turned 99 the other day.
99.
And thinking about the eclipse, I said to my daughter last night, she was very upset with me. I said, you know, Bubby Ninny, we call her, might take this opportunity to slip out during the eclipse. And she's like, don't say that, don't say that. She doesn't want that to happen, but she's in dementia now, not full dementia, but you know, it's a grand old age, and she's living in a nursing home, and her life is looking out the window and talking to the birds. Like, that's her life, right? So for her birthday, we went to the, and I want to tell you, I want you to share your Egypt story, because we went to the Egyptian exhibition at the Sydney Museum, which it's here for about, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 months. That's brought us, you know, all these amazing things over. It's a huge exhibition. Was it Ramses and the Golden Pharaohs or something? And we bought her for a birthday a little wooden bird from the gift shop, which was totally overpriced. But anyway, you know, the perch on her window, what do you buy a 99-year-old, you know, so that the little bird can speak to the birds. And as you're speaking, all I can see is her talking to my daughter as a bird.
Oh, that's,
you know,
fantastic.
When she transitions. But the animals. Yeah, so interesting. What was the, you asked me before we started the recording, you said, had I been to Egypt? And I said, yes. And you're about to launch into an Egypt story. What's your Egypt story?
Well, it's a little bit different than the bird story, but it does include after death communication. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought I was going to be sharing it with you rather than the audience. But anyway, let me explain what happened. When our kids graduated high school, we had all been scuba divers. We got the kids as teenagers to become certified scuba divers. And so when they graduated high school, we said, hey, why don't you pick the next scuba diving trip? And so Kenny, who was our oldest, decided he wanted to go to Egypt. And there was a humongous statue of Ramses, and you and I were talking, Karen, about Ramses. There's this huge statue of Ramses, and it's lying down, and they had built a little house or something around this statue of Ramses. And I'm on the second floor looking at this massive statue of Ramses, and Ramses comes into my head, and I'm like, oh, and I was like, wow. And Ramsey said, and I don't mean to be a little off color, but what he said is, I'd like to have sex with you. And I'm like, you'd like to have sex with me? And it was so most curious type of conversations. And I didn't know anything about Ramses. And I'm like, no, Ramses, I don't want to do that. And he's fairly insistent. And I thought, wow, this is really quite something. And so he and I, my husband was looking at me, and he could tell that I had sort of gone into another realm, because I was very much concentrating on not the statue, but listening to what Ramsey was saying. And it turned out that Ramses had about 130 wives. And yeah. I'm like, wow, this is really quite interesting. So we explored. So anyway, nothing really happened at that point, but Ramses kept coming back. And we ended up at the very, I think it was the southernmost tip of Egypt. And there was a humongous statue of Ramses sitting with, it was beside a mountain. And he had a lot of these different wives around and such. And I had brought my laptop, because I do automatic writing, and I wanted to write exactly what Ramses was saying. And I had spent a good amount of time, because we were in Egypt for a couple of weeks, I guess, a good amount of time communicating with Ramses that you don't have to just have sex. You could have a relationship with love, and it would be really nice to have a relationship with love. And we got down to this place. I'm sorry, I can't remember where it was, at the southernmost part of Egypt. And there's Ramses, and I've got my laptop out, and I'm getting ready to write his messages. And he got it. Like, he actually understood what I was saying, that we could have a relationship that did not involve physicality, the physicality of sex with someone that, you know, of course, is on the other side. But it was such an interesting experience. I had no idea whatsoever that Ramses had like 130 wives. And in fact, his personality certainly lended itself with me to how and why he had 130 wives. It was quite something.
Well, that's really fascinating. Having just gone to the Ramses exhibition, Annika, my daughter, I went with a friend, my daughter, she went traveling on a scarab. She was looking at a scarab, and she went through a portal and went traveling through Egypt, just so connected to Egypt. But I thought I was playing tourist. I really didn't do the traveling thing, because we're in a museum surrounded by people. But actually, I got a lot of information about Ramses during that exhibition, because it's just so, I don't know, the information that comes in now is just so normal to me now. I don't even think of it as something different. And he was telling me that, you know, that he was an ET, and that he was at the beginning of the decline of us into density, and he was trying to share his DNA. That's why he had so many children.
Interesting.
So that humanity could stay more connected. But he fell under the sort of power-hungry ego stuff too, and he did some not so great things. They didn't say this during the exhibition at all. This is what he was sharing with me. But he was, reigning at the beginning of the fall of humanity back into density, where we started to forget our connection to source or to spirit. And he was trying to, you know, upgrade, like keep the DNA going by having all these children. Like,
it makes sense, actually.
Yeah. So he was communicating with you something about that, I would suspect. Like when he said, let me have sex with you, let me share my DNA with you. Yeah, it's so fascinating.
Egypt's a fantastic place. I called it a transformational. It was really, really special. And we ended up going back there again, and it's magical. My husband and I were scuba diving in the Red Sea, and it was in February 2020, and we were on a liveaboard, so we didn't know anything about what was going on with the world, because we're in a liveaboard going scuba diving five times a day in the Red Sea. And we get out, and it was right when COVID started. And we then went to Egypt, and we're with the camels and the pyramids and such, and we're like, oh my gosh. People were starting to wear masks. And when we went to the airport, you had to have your temperature. And if we had stayed there about another week, we wouldn't have been able to get out.
Yeah.
And so it was really Egypt. I love going to Egypt. It's a beautiful spot if, you know, you need some guides and such, but it was really quite lovely.
It's an incredible place.
Yeah.
And you can have a terrible time there and you can have a transcendent time there, because it's such a dichotomy, really. It was a place on Earth where civilization, before we fell into density, was an incredibly enlightened, spiritual, incredible, you know, civilization lived in that land, lived
yes.
on that place. Of the, I suppose they lived on other places on the Earth too, but they left their mark in Egypt, you know. It was the continuation of the Lemurian Atlantean period moved into Egypt. And then they were showing me, my guides were showing me at the Ramses exhibition, that his reign was the beginning of where humanity fell into density. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Because what they were saying on the movies, that they were saying that he reigned before they built the pyramid. And my guides were saying, nope, the pyramids were there. The pyramids were built by the Atlantean energy.
And agreed. Thoth,
yeah, was an ET that lived in Atlantis who carried on into the Egyptian Empire. So did you have any connection to past lives in Egypt when you were there?
Actually, I did. And first of all, it is such a blast talking with you about this, Karen. It's really, really fun. I had a connection to a past life in Egypt when I was that first year after my brother passed. And I described this in my book, Changemaker, How My Brother's Death Woke Up My Life. But Nancy took me on a past life regression activity. And we went through the process and I walked through a door and she said, look at your feet. And I was barefoot and I was a man, 18 years old, and I was in Egypt. And I find it interesting that I was in Egypt with Nancy when I was doing the past life regression, and then have gone back a couple more times. But anyway, I was serving as a servant. I think I was a servant, an 18-year-old boy, and I was the person that was responsible for writing the bushels of wheat or bushels of oats or what the people did, how much the land achieved. I had to write it down for the person that owned the land. That's what happened. I had to write it down. And so I would walk into a pyramid, go up to the second floor, and I stood up and there was this like book, a journal, and I would write down how many, what is it, whatever you call it, things of wheat, bushels of wheat were gathered that day or whatever. And so that was my job. And one day the man that was my boss, he owned me, said he wanted me to write down something that was incorrect. It was a lie. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And the next scene was, I was in the Aya, and I had two angels on either side of me. And I realized that I was flying. And so I was flying in the air with these two angels. And then there was a big commotion down in some square in Egypt. And we flew closer and there was a scaffold. And on the scaffold was a man hanging from the scaffold. And it was me. And I looked at this man and I realized, oh my gosh, that's me. But here I am alive. I'm still alive and I'm with these angels. And I thought, oh my gosh, I had been killed by my boss because I refused to lie. And I was like, okay, Beck, well, that's understandable. And I was pleased that that was happening. And so it was another validation that life is eternal and we do live and we do survive. And we can have all sorts of lives and all sorts of feelings, but we continue to live regardless of what happens in each physical realm.
Wow. So you saw your death. From the perspective of spirit, you saw your Egyptian death. You were hung. You were hanging from the sky.
I was. Yeah. Yeah. I was so curious. I'm like, wow, that's me. And I didn't have any, like, I didn't have an emotional response because I was alive. Like, oh, that's my body, but I'm still here.
Yeah. 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 Years ago, when I was a young naturopathic student, the first time I'd heard of a near-death experience, we had this curriculum after school where we had guest speakers would come, and there was a woman, she was an Australian woman, and it's over 40 years ago, I can't remember her name, but she spoke about her near-death experience. It was the first time I'd ever heard about it. And I remember her saying, her words stick with me 40 years later, I took off my body like I would take off a cardigan or a sweater, you would say, that we call them jumpers, but if I say jumpers, people might not know what I'm talking about. Like I took off my top and discarded it. And I looked at my body as I would look at a piece of clothing that I'd just taken off. And I remember thinking, wow, really? I'll never forget her words, that there was this such a disconnect to the body, in that, you know, it's mine and I wore it, but it's not me. That not identifying with the body was the first time I'd heard that. I think I was about 20, 23 at the time. Yeah. And that's what you were experiencing, looking at your body hanging and not feeling upset or worried. Like, oh, right. There's me on my death when I was in Egypt. Yeah.
That's fascinating. I love that image of taking off your body. I love that. You know, you take off your body, but your consciousness is still there. The first International Association of Near-Death Studies annual conference that I went to, I heard Dr. Bruce Grayson, who wrote the wonderful book After, just came out a couple of years ago. And he's a psychiatrist. And he was talking about what happens with consciousness. And he said that consciousness is separate from the brain. And being a science-based occupational therapist, I'm like, that's what it is. Consciousness is separate from the brain. Consciousness continues. Our body does not. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Bruce. That's what happens. It's really quite fascinating. The amount of validation that near-death experiences have is fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Things are exponentially changing with all this. There's a question here. I wanted to talk about the eclipse and what you think the energy of the eclipse are. I've got the Merkaba behind me, the light body, as it's been depicted as the Merkaba. But Joe Fox has an interesting question here. What becomes of evil does as such as Hitler and the like? Yeah, I guess he's talking about what happens to evil people when they die. What do you think?
Yeah, good question. Good question. And thank you for asking that. I've actually thought about it a lot. And I believe, well, this is what I believe, and it makes sense to me. I don't believe there's a hell. I believe that we all go to whatever you want to call it, heaven or a place of the afterlife, whatever you want to call it. We all go there. People that are very bad, like Hitler and rapists and people that murder just for the sake of murdering or whatever, in my opinion, what happens is that they stay at that level. They only stay there until they recognize what they have done. They forgive themselves and they forgive the activity that they did that harmed somebody else. And most of the time, in order to finish the forgiveness, they actually come back to that person that they have injured, that they have abused, that they have killed, whatever it is, and ask for forgiveness. And I've actually been part of a fair amount of people that have had a terrible life, and then they wanted to come back and ask for forgiveness from those that they have injured. And so once they are able to get forgiveness, then they move to a higher level. Whether you think of it as higher, as above, or I think of it more as inward. You know, we're going into the center. And I think there's many, many, many different levels of let's call it heaven, for lack of a better word. There's many, many different levels. And so they're in the people that are just not good people at all are in the most superficial level. But once they learn to forgive and acknowledge what they did, first they have to acknowledge what they did, and then they learn to forgive themselves. And that can take a very long period of time. And once they learn how to do that, then they can start to move inward and start to connect with more and more people. But until they acknowledge what they've done, they only have their own thoughts. That's the only thing that's around them, is their own thoughts. And my gosh, to be surrounded by your own thoughts 24/7 forever and ever until you actually can move out of that place seems like a hell to me.
Yeah, that's hell. Like you take your thoughts with you and then you have to deal with your thoughts. That's hell. That's what hell is. You and your thoughts. Exactly. I remember Byron Katie talking about, you know who Byron Katie is?
Yeah.
So people don't know, I look her up on a search engine. Just amazing. Going in to teach in a prison. And as she walked into the prison, there was someone in solitary confinement screaming at the top of his lungs. She said to the prison ward, Joe says, thank you. She says to the prison ward, what's going on with that guy? Why is he screaming? And he goes, oh, he's a really bad dude. He's in solitary confinement. And she thought to herself, isn't that interesting? Put a Buddhist monk in solitary confinement and they would find nirvana, but put someone and their stressful thoughts in solitary confinement and now they've got nothing to distract them from their thinking, so now they're in hell. And that's what the hell is. The afterlife hell is taking your stressful thoughts with you and having nothing else to distract you, and now you have to deal with your stressful thoughts.
Agreed. Yeah.
I've spoken to many people who've spoken to the entity that we knew as Hitler in the afterlife, and there's been interesting things said about him. It's a long story. It's a longer story than we've got time for, because I want to go into what you think about what's happening with the eclipse. And one person said that he spent time, as you know, there's no time, a long time transforming, eliminating, getting rid of those negative subconscious programming, that negative. And but he came to Earth for a purpose and a reason, and that was an interesting story. But what do you think is going to happen during the eclipse? There's so many people talking about it. It's going to, like, the world's going to end, the world's going to be enlightened. I don't know. This eclipse has been spoken about for decades, actually, online. What's your thoughts on the eclipse?
It's an interesting question. I think it's a way for us to step back, look at what's happening, be aware of the energy that's around, be aware of the birds, what's happening with the trees, what's happening with the weather, and really connect again with ourselves. It's a time for us to recognize that we are just one part of the entire holistic connection of all. And so I think it's a way to spur us on. I do think we're in an environment of change, and I would be surprised if there's a lot that happens during the eclipse as far as on a big earthly level. But I think individually we can use it as an opportunity to grow and expand and receive love, because love is the connection between everything.
I concur. I absolutely agree with you. I don't see any big cataclysmic happening on Earth, but there are little cataclysms happening everywhere. We're flooding. Sydney flooded the other day. Where my daughter is up north, that's flooding. Like, there's earthquakes and volcanoes. It's like, that's happening and it's ramping up, and it's kind of happening around the eclipse, but it's happening all the time anyway.
Yes.
But yeah, it is an opportunity for us to go within and find some healing. We haven't even spoken. We've been chatting for like nearly an hour and a half. We haven't even spoken about your healing work. I thought we're going to make this all about healing today, but we didn't. But I guess it is healing, what we've said.
It's great fun talking with you.
What do you want to say? I know we need another 3 hours. Dying. What do you want to say to people about healing? People who are feeling like they need some healing. What do you want to say to people about their light?
Well, there is energy within us that we can access at any time. And it's the energy of natural healing. And my favorite modality is Reiki. And Reiki is natural energy healing that you can learn in one day. Now, you think, how valid can something be if you can learn this in one day? But you actually can. And I teach it all the time, universities. I teach it to medical professionals. I used to teach it online during COVID. It really is quite something. And so I would encourage you, if you're interested in helping yourself heal, because what Reiki does is it helps ourselves heal and it helps us heal others. Now, I said helps us because it's actually each one of us that does our own healing. And so Reiki believes that there's something broader than physicality. There's something higher than our physical existence, whatever you want to call it. God, Buddha, Allah, whatever you want, but there is something. And so we ask for a person's highest good in order to assist their healing process. And Reiki uses energy. And a lot of times we use our hands, but you can also just use intention and you visualize energy going towards a person that has given you permission. You must always get permission in order to provide healing, at least during the Reiki concept, because it's up to each one of us to heal. It's not up to somebody else. We come onto this life, onto this earth, because we have a purpose. And it's our choice. We have free will to determine when we want to be healed, how we want to be healed, what we want to heal. And so it's each person's own responsibility to help heal themselves. And so then the Reiki practitioner is just the intermediary. We're like the empty bamboo rod where we ask for a person's highest good to be received. It comes through us and it gets sent to the person who we're providing healing to, and it's the person's own body that does the healing. And all you have to do is search Reiki, R-E-I-K-I, Reiki near me. That's all you have to do, Reiki near me. And then trust yourself to choose a Reiki practitioner. And it works, and you can learn it in one day. I mean, some people take 2 days, but it is that effective and fast, and it's a blast, and yeah. It works.
It's interesting. People use the word Reiki. I did Reiki over 40 years ago, and I was taught with someone that really stuck to the traditional Japanese teachings, and it was a very strict, and it was secret, and you couldn't yes. tell anybody. And, yes. and I didn't fall for all that sort of secret stuff, but it was my first introduction into energy medicine. Energy is medicine. And I think that Reiki, the word Reiki, you know, people do Reiki courses, it's so much more diverse. People bring their own wisdom and channeling to it today. It's not stuck to a you know, like it was when I did it, but it seems to be an initiation into people expanding their consciousness and realizing who they are as an extension of source energy, and that they do have the ability to channel energy for themselves and others, and they can create their own reality, whether it is changing their body from sick to well, or change, or helping another in that transition from illness to, or pain to freedom. Yeah, it seems to be an initiation for many people that are exploring energy as medicine.
I agree.
Would you agree? Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. It automatically raises our vibrational energy, and it mm-hmm. facilitates after death communication, actually. And I've thought for a long time, I'm like, so why does that? Why does it raise our vibrational energy? And the Yasui form of Reiki, which is the a classic form of Reiki,
Miki Yasui,
from Japan, discovered it, and he receive some healing symbols, and these healing symbols are Japanese letters, and they are used to facilitate physical and emotional healing, long distance healing, energy work. They're used to facilitate that.
When you're teaching Reiki, do you use the Japanese symbols, the letters?
Yes. Yes.
You still do. So you still use the classic Yasui method.
I do. Well, that's the way I teach it. And
right.
so I was like, what is the deal with these symbols? But millions and millions and millions of people now are using these same symbols. And so when you have millions of people having the same symbols and the same energy and the same thought about these symbols, it facilitates healing. So it jumpstarts the person's ability to learn how to heal, because everybody's doing it in a similar fashion with a similar belief. And so to me, it's what's called an attunement. These symbols are placed in our aura by a Reiki master. And I think the word master is so hilarious, because you can actually learn Reiki at a master level with not too much challenge. But I think it's just sort of a funny name. But anyway, the Reiki master, the person that teaches us Reiki and facilitates that learning, will place the symbols in your aura and on your hands. And so all of a sudden you have the ability to provide healing to yourself and others. And I teach it in a group setting, and it's so interesting. I don't tell people anything about what to expect when they receive an attunement. That's the difference with Reiki versus other ones. You get these symbols placed in your hands. And so many people have, as soon as they get attuned, I say, how are you doing? And we'll do it in a group setting. And their hands are hot, their hands are sweaty, their hands are tingling, they feel a sense of peace, and that happens immediately. Not to everybody, but to a lot. And then we'll immediately go into healing with others. You receive and share healing and talk about it, and then we all talk about it. And we do that three different times, and by the end of one day, people know how to heal themselves because you learn how to heal yourself first and heal and help others heal. And it's fascinating.
And help others heal. Absolutely. I have to say, I dropped the symbols years ago. I can't remember how many years ago. I studied many other healing modalities. And I was just thinking as you were talking, do I even remember the symbols? And as I had that thought, the symbols came right back. And I'm
oh,
like,
yeah.
Hey, do you remember the symbols?
Yeah, it's intention. And so, you know, if you think, oh, my gosh, can I remember these symbols? But yes, yeah, as you said, right they back. Just came right there.
They came right back, yeah.
But when I'm sorry.
But the healing that I do now is rather than relying on symbols or anything is once you open enough to have a connection with your source or your guides, I call my guides very irreverently the mob. I just ask them, like, what do you think needs to happen here, guys?
Agreed.
And yeah, so I sort of rely on this higher perspective to guide me through anything that I'm facilitating, whether it's a show or a healing or a session or, yeah, like, what do you think needs to happen here? And they're on tap. But I think that before you know that you've got your guides on tap, many people don't, and they say, how can I speak to my spirit guides? This sort of having that Reiki and the symbols and having something to focus on and using that energy frequency to channel energy, it's needed. And as I say, as an initiation, I think, into expansion.
I just finished teaching Reiki Level 1 and Reiki 2 at the American Occupational Therapy Association annual conference. And during Reiki 2 is when I actually teach people of the symbols. So Reiki Level 1, you get what's called a tune, the symbols get placed in you, and then the next day is Reiki Level 2. And during the long distance healing part, because that's part of Reiki Level 2, it was so exciting. It was just like 2 weeks ago. One of the people that was there met her guide, her spirit guide, for the first time. She said, "Hey, I just met my spirit guide." I'm like, all right. So it really is amazing.
Well, I think this is needed because during my Reiki 2 attunement, the woman that was teaching me did not have that knowledge of spirit communication. And I had all these images of people and crystals and spirits and places. And I'm asking her, what the hell's going on? She's like, I don't know. Because she's just doing it. She's just doing it like, right, I'm going to do the attunement. Like, she's just doing it as she's been taught. But I think today, once you start opening and gaining access to, you know, your guides and past lives and other people's past lives and all, you know, you just start expanding because the energy on the planet is so different now than it was 40 years ago when I was doing my first Reiki initiation.
Yes.
That, yeah, all this needs to be included in Reiki courses. They need people like you who have that, you know, communication with the afterlife, if that's what you want to call it, or other realms or dimensions. It all needs to be included in what is called Reiki today, I think, yeah.
Well, what happened, Karen?
We've got only a couple of minutes left, darling. Two minutes left. And I would like to send out a healing to people.
Oh, nice.
Who are feeling, as I say, I wanted today to be about healing and knowing that we are an extension of source energy and we are powerful and we are infinite creative potential is a healing in itself. But what would you like to say to people to send out a healing to the people listening to the recording and to the world as we move through this transition of the eclipse that everyone's been talking about?
Well, first of all, thank you so very much for having me here. It's been just a blast talking with you. And as far as getting ready for the eclipse and getting readying our bodies for healing, I encourage you to maybe close your eyes and give yourself a nice big hug. You know, feel the love that is coming to you from the universe. Feel the love that's coming to you from Karen and myself. Feel the love that you have within you. And now maybe place your hands on your heart. feel that energy of love surrounding you and encompassing you, and know that it's there. It is always there. You're a beautiful soul. You're totally awesome. And it's wonderful to have you participate in this glorious event with Karen and myself. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Becky. And if you want to meet Becky, she's going to spend 10-15 minutes with us in the group. We're going to go straight into the Zoom room and do a little catch up and maybe continue the healing. You've been listening to Accentuate the Positive on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network on 107.7 and 105.3 FM. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Becky, for being with us on the show.
Bye. It's been lovely. Now. Thank you. Bye. Cheers. Bye.